be strong. Force of Filth, somebody wants to play against you. Please let them resolve some spells.
You can cast your Aurum Shant, maybe Veil of Summer. You can have your Slime Time Live with Avoozing out others. You can tell me all about Urza's stupid saga. You can even Pithing Needle my Jace the Mind Sculptor.
You can try to crop rotation, I know you love tutors.
You can have your Engineer, I like that you're a brewer. You can channel your inner dragon's rage, except wait, counterbalance, trigger, fetch your Mystic Sector place, bitch.
You can cast a Glimpse of Nature, why would a hater? You can green some Zenith for your favorite elf reclaimer.
You can natural order for your biggest to be crater, but thank God Fetchland counterbalance
combo is my savior.
If you try to ravel time, I'll fucking reveal my top card.
Thwart back triple Mystic Sanctuary
and counterbalance your fucking soul.
And I know for a fact you got no clean attack, you've got no mind break trap or a shitty face on Drazi.
All you've got is a mess lift that's unsigned and the knowledge that Sanctuary counterbalance fucked you up.
If you ever try to use the stack without permission, I will counterbalance all your stupid win conditions. Mystic Sanctuary, zero mana interaction is where I derive all of my sexual satisfaction.
Except not in a way that's like creepy. In a way that keeps you from having any actual fun, see? When my pleasures decayed abruptly, I reach up and entreat the angels in their heavenly Mystic Sanctuary.
Mystic Sanctuary.
See, they're in their sanctuary.
Their
Mystic Sanctuary. Counterbalance your shit. The kind of magic I'll teach my kids. You cannot resolve a single spell, so you pass the turn all while hitting yourself like a stupid fucking loser. Stupid fucking loser.
I take this opportunity, since you suck, to reminisce about how Sanctuary counterbalance fucked you up.
Sanctuary counterbalance seriously fucked you up.
Sanctuary counterbalance seriously fucked you up. Sanctuary counterbalance seriously fucked you up.
Hello and welcome to Eternal Dirtles. I'm your host, Zach Clark, and with me as always, Phil Bleckman. Phil, how's it going?
Yo, what's up? Good to be back, bro.
Yeah, man. We took that little hiatus for August. We're back in September now, and we're almost into fall, which means it's horror time, guys.
Oh, wow. Ghost stories.
Yeah, dude. We're talking about Innistrad Midnight Hunt. We're going to talk about a couple cards that we like from the set. The whole set's been spoiled. This is just a quick preview episode to our next episode, which Nate's going to come back and review the whole set with us. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So look out for next week's episode as well when Nathan Golia makes his triumphant return to the cast for an episode.
Yeah, how are we supposed to do a whole set review without Nate G?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how are we supposed to be doing that?
It's a question we've been pondering, and luckily we didn't have to make that decision.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about just a couple of cards that like jumped out to us at first as like the standouts for stuff that we're considering. I think there's a lot of role players in this set, even though it feels depowered, quote unquote, compared to like the last couple of sets that have been absolute bangers that upended the entire format. I think this is a good power level set where there's a bunch of role players that could open up a lot of doors for new decks or advance different strategies for current decks without just entirely redictating the format to have to buy back in.
Yeah, I think what this set offers is a lot of tier shifting, which I think is something we don't talk about in the format enough, is like when a deck goes from like being tier zero, gets knocked down a peg or two, maybe hits tier one, tier two, and another deck hits tier zero, which we've seen in my personal experience. We've seen a lot with Rug Delver, you know, go back to the times where Deathrite Shaman was played and Rug slowly got taken back because it relied on stuff like Nimble Mongoose and Tarmogoyf and whatnot, and it didn't have access to the better parts of Deathrite Shaman. And then when Deathrite Shaman got banned, slowly Rug became better again. And then Red and Six came out. Rug was the only deck that everybody was playing.
And Storm. Like
so, yeah, and Storm, exactly. So I think it's important to talk about the tier shifting that happens when a set like this comes out. So all that obviously we'll take time to see, but I think we're going to see some tier shifting.
Can I give a quick shout out before we hop into the cards here about the one combination of cards that if it works in the rules, how I believe it does, and we'll have the judges that listen check for this, and we'll have to wait for the rules, the set rules when they come out along with the set. But shout out to Ludovic Necrogenius's backside called Olag Ludovic's Hubris, an Enduring Angel, because that combo means you can't lose the game.
That's cool.
So I can explain.
When
you transform Ludovic, which is a 2-mana 2/3, now it costs a lot of mana. This isn't Legacy playable. This is just something that like there's no way they saw this in when they were designing the set. So Ludovic is a 2/3 with an activated ability of X blue, blue, black, black. So it's at least 5 mana because X can't be 0. It says exile the X creature cards from your graveyard, transform Ludovic. And then the backside says as it transforms into this, it becomes a copy of a creature exiled with the first effect to transform it. Except it's a 4/4 and it's a zombie instead of its other types. And it comes in with a number of +1/+1 counters equal to the creature number of creature cards exiled it with it because they needed more text. But the key part of that is it becomes a copy of Enduring Angel. And Enduring Angel says if you would lose, instead your life total becomes 3 and then you transform it. If it can't transform, you lose the game. However, Olag can transform. So you just can't lose because it will stay Olag. But because it has the ability to transform, it can. And therefore... you can't lose. So there you go. There's the overly complicated, intricate design that's never going to see Legacy. But now you have the brain space taking it up in your brain. And you're going to be like, how does this work in the rules? And I'm going to be like, how does anything work in the rules? Look at Urza's Saga.
Yeah. Look at Urza's Saga. Indeed.
Look at it. Just look at it. Just take a look.
Yep. All right. Well, let's. So I wanted to highlight one particular card, in my opinion, that I think it has a lot of potential, but we're going to need to see a little bit of time for it to become a true role player. And that is Slogurk the Overslime, or Slogurk the Overslime.
I want to say Slogurk because it makes me feel like I'm slurping a Slurpee. where Slogurk is, but it could be Slogurk. You know, the syllable, like, the syllable spread could be after the G as opposed as
I mean,
opposed
if
to
it
before
was,
the G.
If it was S-L-A-W would be Slogurk. And I like, you know, like coleslaw. Like, I don't like slaw. Like, he's a slime. So he's kind of like a slurry. So I think of him as like being like a slaw, you know?
Dude, this is one of those areas where nobody can get upset at you like Teferi. Yeah. Like, Teferi, you're just objectively wrong.
But no, Teferi, Slogurk, that's how it's pronounced.
Slogurk or Slogurk? Who knows? That's you have an argument there. You have legs to stand on with that one.
All I'm saying is, how do you pronounce my full name?
Zeke Leclerc.
It's
Zeke Leclerc.
I'm saying Zachary.
Zachary. Yeah.
Right. You don't say Zachary. Like Zachary. Like
Zachary. Yeah.
Like that's ridiculous.
Zachary Clark.
Teferi. Jeffrey. Teferi. Zachary.
Do we know Teferi's last name?
Teferi.
Do we know it?
No, I don't think we do.
Oh, you want to know? There was a good post about Arcady Sabbath, the Elder Dragon, right? From Legends, classic.
Oh,
but it's spelled exactly the same way that Arcades is spelled. So if you go to an arcade,
like
and
more
it's
than
plural,
one arcade,
it's Arcades.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's spelled exactly the same, but everybody just naturally has pronounced it Arcades. And nobody has ever really questioned it, except until I saw this tweet where it's like, it's spelled exactly like Arcades. Why is it not pronounced Arcades? Why is it not Arcade Sabbath?
As a heads up, as a young Zach Clark, I definitely pronounced it Arcade Sabbath.
Yeah. Like Arcade Sabbath sounds because, like a band.
Yeah, dude, Arcade Sabbath sounds like something like Imagine Dragons like style, like, you know, The Weeknd, you know. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm rocking the fuck out.
The yeah, 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 Sabbath, even. Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about your pick here, Slogurk.
Yeah, so my guy Slogurk, the Overslime, is a 3/3 legendary ooze, and he costs 1, a green, and a blue. He has trample, and it says, whenever a land is put into your graveyard from anywhere, put a +1/+1 counter on Slogurk the Overslime. Remove 3 +1/+1 counters from Slogurk. Return it to its owner's hand. When this leaves the battlefield, return up to 3 target creatures from your grave. 3 target land cards from your graveyard to your hand.
So it's like a roundabout Life from the Loam that is also a gigantic trampling beater if you want it to be.
So there's going to be a non-zero amount of times where you play this card and you just swing in a couple of times and you beat your opponent. But there's going to be there's going to be some grindy games where you can recur your wastelands and your fetch lands and, you know, possibly some other utility lands. For me, it would be Rug Delver, right? You play the Rug Delver as like your top end and try and get it in that way. Right now, that slot is contested with Uro, though. So, like, you got to make a choice. I feel like both of these are build arounds, though. Like, you can decide what kind of rug style deck you're gonna want to try.
Yeah, I mean, like the first and obvious home for something like this is lands, right? Of course,
And
I've seen like a bunch of proficient land players say that they think that this is actually playable in lands, whereas Uro isn't, because Uro is like too slow. You don't want to be exiling lands out of your yard.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of things that, like, even though Uro looks like it would be good in lands, in practice, it's not. Whereas this is just another good way to overload your opponent's Swords to Plowshares. It's going to give you redundant Life from the Loans if you ever get like surgical or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a backdoor plan. Like they just have to, like, you, if you play this, you just don't have to deal with it. And it's whenever it's put into a land is put into a graveyard from anywhere, you get the counter. So that includes cycling, that includes dredging, that includes all of that.
So the only reason this isn't like outright 100% better than Tireless Tracker is because it costs 2 different colors mana. That's the only thing. Like I don't feel like I would even think about not playing this over Tireless Tracker unless I was like, well, I'm kind of construed on mana. My deck is, you know, like I it'd be hard for me to cast this. Whereas Tireless Tracker, I just need a green and I can make it happen.
I think like the best part about Tireless Tracker is that because the clue is something you can crack at instant speed, you can forever play around Surgical Extraction if you are at that point in mana development.
Yeah.
But like Tireless Tracker is also, it does a similar job of being like the alternate beatdown plan, but this one has trample. So
yeah. Not to mention, let's also combine this with the fact that you're swinging in with this guy. Let's say he's a 7/7. You're swinging in with this guy and your opponent's like, I'm going to swords it. And you're like, cool. I'll just bounce it to my hand. I've saved my creature. I get 3 lands back. Like it gets to a point where your opponent has to think about, you have options, right? Like as the aggressor, you have options. Do I want to bounce this to my hand, or do I want to attack my opponent, or do I attack my opponent? And as the cost, it's the cost. So like, there's nothing that can be responded to. You know, when you bounce this back to your hand,
that's already
you're paying it. So they can't, in response, Swords to Plowshares your guy.
It's very Wirewood symbiotish that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of, patterns that are going to be tough for your opponent in this scenario, because even if they can remove it, by removing it, they give you a loan.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
When it leaves the battlefield, you get to pick up 3 lands. It's not like it needs counters on it for that to happen. It just needs
it does have to have 3. Leave. It does need to have 3 counters on it.
No, it needs to have 3 counters to bounce it yourself.
Yeah. I'm saying that to do any of these things, it needs 3 counters. But that's not hard to pull off, honestly.
That's not hard to pull off. I'm saying that as at the fail rate, if you have any lands in your graveyard, if you let's say you play this on 3 and have a couple lands in your graveyard and don't have any +1/+1 counters on it, and they're like, okay, bolt it. That was 3. That was a 3 mana loan.
Yeah,
because you get to pick 3 lands back up.
Yep.
So
and
I'm saying that the fail rate is, because it's a leave the battle's trigger, is even if you're not doing the thing, it's just additional Life from the Loams, which is where this can become very good, because this can go stand in the way of something, this can get removed. Eventually, you'll be able to remove it yourself. So it's just loam insulation. So now if you're playing that deck, you get to do all those things. Now, one thing about this is that unlike Tireless Tracker, which gets to maintain itself on the board, this also cares about stuff in the graveyard. So if a deck does punish you playing a land style deck with Loam and they go after your graveyard in some way and you don't have a way to convert that. Now, this can get bigger, but like, let's say they've leylined of avoided you or something. Then the replacement effect of cards not going to your graveyard means that you're not going to be able to get +1/+1 counters on Slowgurk because the land needs to go to the graveyard. And if it's replaced, then it won't. So
real quick, I want to correct myself real fast. It's remove 3 counters from Slowgurk, : return to its owner's hand. So you can't get around like Swords of Plowshares. It's not part of the cost.
Okay, good. Yeah, cool,
as a heads up, I screwed that up. My apologies to everybody, the entire internet,
The Slowgurk fans.
Yeah, to all you Slowgurks doing the slow jerk.
So you want to know why I'm saying Slowgurk? I just realized it. You know where
is
I'm
it
getting
Slowgurk?
No, it's Gogurk.
Is it Slowgurk?
No, it's not.
We've been pronouncing it wrong the whole time.
I get that.
Todd?
It's Gogurk. Gogurt, the yogurt in the tubes.
Yeah, Gogurt. Yeah,
Gogurt. That's where I'm getting Slowgurk from.
Yeah. Have you ever heard that joke? The about like GIF, JIF, you know, that whole, you know.
That debate, of course.
Is it a gigawatt or is it a gigawatt? My all-time favorite joke is if G-O-D came down and went, it's pronounced Jod, and then
yeah,
just
that'd
left.
Be great, yeah. You guys have been doing it wrong the whole time.
It's pronounced Jod.
Blessed be in the eyes of Jod.
Yes. And then man's best friends are called Dodges.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Dodges.
I already say Doggo and Doges all the time, so yeah. That would work out.
My dude's hanging out on the couch there.
Slowgurk, the Overslime, I feel like could have homes in like not full on land based, like Dark Depths style stuff. Like you could play a little bit more mid rangey, you know, Dak Faden esque style stuff. Now, I feel like that's going to show up a lot less because Uro exists.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is a world where if you just want to be on a bunch of cycling lands, like this can be a thing. I'm actually thinking that this is a good home for, or this will see a lot of play in Modern.
Yeah.
Now, Modern may be too fast, but you have Renin 6 in that format and Uro is banned. So being able to move and convert all of those lands and pick up those lands and just do a bunch of shenanigans like that in a rug shell seems like it could be interesting. So Overslime will definitely see play. It's a role player. It's not going to be too groundbreaking, I don't think, but it's fun. And I think it's really good design.
I think it's very easy to have Overslime be bigger than Goyf. And I honestly, like who've been playing Goyf?
Sure. Yeah. You know? Well, Vintage.
Yeah. That's basically it.
Goyf sees play in Vintage and Goyf sees play as a four of in the Jund deck in Modern right now because Jund Modern is just Lurrus plus all of MH2 cards and Tarmogoyf because it's a two drop.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. So you've got some cards to talk about.
Yeah. So let's talk about Malevolent Hermit. What the fuck? Okay.
Yeah, this guy.
So let me find
creep.
Malevolent Hermit is a one in a blue for a 2/1. It's a human wizard. It has blue, sacrifice it, counter target non-creature spell unless its controller plays 3. And then it has Disturb for 2 and a blue, which is you can cast it from your graveyard transformed for its Disturb cost, so 2 and a blue. And it comes back as a 2/2 flyer that says non-creature spells you control can't be countered.
That seems pretty good, honestly.
This seems like, I mean, people were making jokes about Kai's Invitational card getting power creeped here. It's not strict power creep, but it's damn close. So being a 2/1 body that you can pay blue to mana leak a non-creature spell, that's already very good.
It's fine, yeah.
And I mean, let's say this, like being an inherent 2/1, like Disturb is a 2/1 mechanic, right? It's like Adventure. You get 2 cards for the price of 1.
Yep.
So if this trade, like if this just trades on the ground with something, and then you went up a card because Disturb just says +1.
Beyond that, like let's say you just cast Malevolent Hermit and your opponent counters it, you can Disturb it afterwards.
Great. Yeah, exactly.
You know, like it just like if your opponent doesn't want your 2/1 on the board, because you know you're beating him, you're just like in a stalemate where you're beating him down. All of a sudden, you're like, well, I'll just put this flyer into play then. You know,
it's one of those
things
where
that's just fine.
you get to, like, when this card is on the table and you're the beatdown, or like your opponent has to respond to you in some capacity, like they have to take an action, otherwise they'll eventually lose. Malevolent Hermit puts them in this position where they have to start throwing things out there, and then you get to make the decision on whether or not something matters. Because Mana Leak is big in Legacy. Like, that might as well. Yeah. That's close to a hard counter unless, you know, a lot of draw go has happened.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, another thing to think about with the Malevolent Geist, right? Benevolent Geist, is that it's non-creature spells you control can't be countered, which means that your opponent, I'm not positive here, but your opponent can't Veil of Summer your cards.
No, because
Veil of Summer, right?
Veil of Summer says your cards can't be countered, not a counter's theirs.
No, but I guess, yeah, technically the spell would just fizzle. It wouldn't be countered. Never mind. I take it all back. I've been messing up a lot this. Forgive me.
Veil of Summer doesn't counter anything. It just says your stuff can't be countered. So it feels like a counter spell a lot of the time.
But you can't. It says you gain protection from blue and black, right? It's been so long. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
This card and Veil of Summer will not overlap in any way. Veil of Summer is stupid.
I take it all back.
This card, I like.
Veil of Summer is stupid as positioned by the intro this week.
This card has the potential to find homes in so many decks, or a role in so many decks, because you could see this being played in a tempo shell or a controlling style shell that wants a little bit of the beatdown plan. This is also could show up in combo decks, because you can just mill this and then turn on the disturb cost, or you can have this as like a counter spell that costs blue on the table to protect your combo piece. And then on the backside, when you flip it, it just says you can go off now.
Yeah.
Like, this seems awesome. This card seems incredible to me. I mean, will people actually take the time? I mean, I think so. I think there's enough text on this card that is very relevant in both fair and unfair matchups. And also, if you have the flips, let's say you get Malevolent Hermit down, they trade for it and they have to pass the turn or whatever, and then you Benevolent Geist. Now your non-creature spells can't be countered, so your counter spells are uncounterable. So you can fight over their shit and they can't fight back. It's very Teferi, and we know how shitty Teferi 3 is.
Yep. To quote Jim Carrey from Dumb and Dumber.
We're going to need to put a sound bite in. I didn't hear that at all.
I said, I like it a lot.
Oh yeah, he does like it a lot. let's give some quick shout outs to some other cards, shall we?
Yes.
All right, Memory Deluge. Holy shit. When I saw this card, my mind broke for a second before I understood that it costs 4 and 7 and is never going to see play in Legacy outside of dedicated combo shells. But like, if you're an Omnitel, is this not better than Dawn from Dreams? Now, Dawn from Dreams is always going to look at 7 on the first look. But Memory Deluge is 2 blue-blue for an instant that says, look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the amount of mana spent to cast the spell.
Okay, well, but you're not spending any mana with Omnitel.
Oh, wow. I just got that.
Ah, Zach Clark.
Wow, the memory
negative
deluge.
Two. Phil, the negative memory one. Deluge.
I got deluged. I got deluged into oblivion.
You
here.
Got malevolent hermited, dude.
Dude, I just got hermited. Yo, shout out flavor wise for Grafted Identity. It's a control magic, but as an additional cost, sacrifice a creature, and if the artwork is a dude putting somebody else's face on.
Yeah, you know. My personal favorite art in this set is Curse of Surveillance, which is just the hand from the kid from the gate, played by Steven Dorff.
Oh, yeah. You got to get your eyeballs. I'm sorry I'm going to have to do this to everybody on the cast, but the new Delver of Secret art just looks like Mitch McConnell looking at every bill that could help people before he burns it.
Oh, God.
Now everybody's just going to, like, I'm never going to be able to play with that Delver of Secrets because it just looks like a happy Mitch McConnell to me. And I can't
Why couldn't they do that for Steve instead? You know?
Yeah. Give us something that's literally anything else.
Don't Sakura Tribelder instead. You know, right, I know he's not a turtle either, but you know, anyhow,
let's give a quick shout out to Siphon Insight. Siphon Insight is a blue-black instant that says, look at the top two cards of your opponent's library, exile one of them, put the other one on the bottom of their deck, and then you can cast it for as long as it remains exiled. And it has flashback for 1 blue-black. So the playtest name of this card was Drink Twice. Now, if that doesn't make you want to play the card, I don't know what does. The downside, though, is as cool as this card is, because you can play lands off of it, so you can play lands off of your opponent's thing, and so it gives you some amount of selection. So even though it's not cards in your deck, the fact that you can hit lands and it gives you some amount of selection makes it kind of better than Think Twice in my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
But the downside, though, is that it's black and Veil of Summer exists and says, look at target opponent's library.
And blue.
You're gonna get blown out real bad, and it's gonna feel real bad. It's gonna go to your graveyard, and you're gonna get to do it again. And your opponent's gonna be like, "All right, veil it again."
Well, I drew another veil. Yeah.
Yeah. How about that? So I don't think that's gonna see any play because Veil of Summer's existence will make it enough that you will lose when you cast it. Otherworldly Gaze. Otherworldly Gaze is an instant that says, "Look at the top three cards of your library. Put any of them into your graveyard, and the rest on top of your library in any order, and has flashback for one and a blue." Now you're thinking to yourself, Phil, it's a one mana instant that doesn't go up cards and puts you down cards. And I say, yeah, I agree. It's probably bad. However, there is a world where if you played, my tendency is to go very aggressive into counterbalance. This is the type of card where you could play a lower to the ground style control deck on a bunch of counterbalances, because Otherworldly Gaze with counterbalance is functionally a 2-for-1 every time, assuming you're going to clip whatever they cast with counterbalance. So if you have a counterbalance and you're holding up a mana, that mana is likely going to trade with whatever spell they cast. And then for one in a blue in your graveyard, they now have to look at it the same way that they would look at Sensei's Divining Top with counterbalance, where, okay, what do I do? Because I know that they have at least one way to manipulate their library guaranteed that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole bunch of other shenanigans that you could do too. But the fact that you can, like, this is not putting you up any cards at all when you have it, because it goes down a card. But with counterbalance, it's a clean 2-for-1 that will cost them their resources that they've invested mana into. So in that world, I could see this being a role player that could bring back a bunch of counterbalance builds, assuming the format is ripe enough with the correct CMCs, which right now I think it is, because the format's like all blue red Delver and like Doomsday, and like if you can trade, like being able to use this to trade with your opponent's creatures out of like D&T or something, because they're not playing Cavern of Souls, there's, you know.
So here's my a bit of pushback on this card is that obviously it doesn't draw a card. Let's skip the obvious.
Well, it has flashback. So
yeah. I'm not even hating on that part. Let's push that to the side for right now. Let's say it is worth playing. Is it better than all the other possible cantrips you can play at one mana? Like, would I play this over Ponder if I was playing that counterbalance plan, right?
So when I say playing that type of build, I'm not saying this is replacing Brainstorm or Ponder, because that would be...
Of course not. It would never
do that.
Obviously not saying, Brainstorm, for sure.
This could be, like, let's say you are building your counterbalance control deck, and before you would have 4 Sensei's Top for counterbalance, right?
Yeah.
Now you could have 4 Otherworldly Gaze and 4 counterbalance. Now, obviously, that's way worse, right? Yeah. There's no doubting that. But it means that this is the first time in a while that there has been an instant at one mana that can manipulate the top of your library. So you had Brainstorm, and then you've had a bunch of effects at 2. But rarely...
What about Index or Vision?
Well, that's a one-shot, right? Yes. I'm saying that because this has flashback as a 2-shot, it means that you functionally will have Counterspell in your graveyard.
Yeah.
And it also, in the instances where you just need to find your sweeper, this can dig very deep. Like, let's say you're I'm Terminus or Bust. Like, well, in their end step, mill 3. And then, but when you untap, if you're like, I'm Terminus or Bust, you can mill 3 more.
You can do it
and
again.
Look 7 card deep. Like, that's huge.
Phil, I want to push forward on this. And note that it doesn't look 3 cards deep. It actually looks 4 cards deep. You can get rid of all 3 cards and see what the 4th card is.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? So, like,
that's huge.
Let's say you're playing in the late game and they rebuilt and your Terminus are bust and you don't have a fetch to put to get Mystic Sanctuary or whatever to put Terminus back on top. So you're like, I need to find Terminus here.
Yeah.
Or if you're like, I just need to find Entreat the Angels because I have all this mana and I need to close the door. You can mill the top 3 if none of them are what you need, and then you can flash it back and do it again. And then if it's not, you can dump all of them. So you can look 7 cards.
You can
deep.
7 cards. Yeah. That I just wanted to force that point, because I think a lot of people see this and they're like, well, you look at 3 and then you look at 3, and if it's not there, you know, like that sucks. But this is literally being able to look, both times you cast it, you can look basically four cards deep because you're going to eventually see that next card. Whatever that next card is what you're going to get. So I think that's it's important to note that you can get rid of all three cards. This isn't like, you know, I guess Surveil is the same way. This is Surveil, right? Surveil 3.
Yeah, pretty much. It
basically reads Surveil 3.
It pretty much reads Surveil 3, yes. It says Surveil 3. Flashback 1 and a blue. Surveil 3, flashback 1 and a blue.
Because normally with a card like this, you see something like, look at the top three cards, discard two, put one back, you know, like that sort of situation.
This is just like, jumps out to me because forever since top is gone, like top was a way that you could manipulate the top of your library for a single mana. Yeah. The only other card that really does that effectively is Brainstorm. Whereas now this one is going to be at the mercy of the top three cards of your deck every time. But that's what top was too.
Yeah.
So like, if you want to, you like multiple instances of these, I think will, if your deck is built properly, could bring back a version of a counterbalance control deck that I think could be interesting. I don't think that this card could see play anywhere else in Legacy, but an instant speed blue mana card that theoretically doesn't put you down a card because it has flashback also means that in a world like, if you're a lower to the ground build and you're, let's say you're on Mentor or something like that, it is two spells for Mentor. So that's also like some play there. So
that ain't nothing.
On its face, this card is bad, but I think there are enough ways to pay off what it's doing that it could see play and it could be interesting and not an embarrassing card to play because of all the synergy that it could create. So am I going to try it? Yeah, obviously. Is it going to be bad? Most likely.
Probably.
But like, who knows?
Yeah. All right. You got any others?
Shout out to Larder Zombie. Never have I felt more personally connected to a card in my life. Larder Zombie's flavor text is that Cathars arrived at the abandoned lab to find many of the unfinished projects gnawing on one another. And then it's literally a zombie like
trying to get its brains,
trying to eat a brain out of a jar. Now, when this card was first spoiled, the actual name of the card is Larder Zombie. But when it was spoiled, it was called Pantry Zombie. And it was just, it made me be like, yeah, I mean, this dude just licking peanut butter out of the jar.
Yeah, dude. I mean, isn't the larder a pantry anyhow?
Yeah, you know, I feel it. I'm with him. All right. Yeah, those are the initial standouts. There's a bunch of other cards that we're going to talk about. Obviously, like, we're going to go through all the mythic cycles. There's a bunch of role players that I want to get into. Like, I want to dive a little bit deeper on Faithful Amending. That's the blue-white Faithless Looting at instant speed with flashback for one blue-white. I think there's a world that could open up some Esper tokens with that style of card. And we'll get into that when Nate is here.
Yep.
But yeah.
We'll talk about Stasis with Teferi, who slows the sunset.
Dude, man, Teferi is the best printing for Stasis in years. In years.
Yep. All right. Well, I think that does it for us this week. I want to thank all of our patrons. Thanks for sticking with us through last month while we took a bit of a break and got everything back together. And I don't know. I think that's it for us this week.
Till next time.
Till next time.
Trigger the Euro stays.
I'm feeling it.
If your hand respawns.
bonds. I'll cast Vela Summer. I would say good game, but it was a bummer. Is paired with aggressive threats who could have predicted this, saying no to Jace playing Zero Terminus. Look to the past to remember and smile. Edict was played, Kate commanding a vial. Pass turned to me while they're holding up green, and I see in his sleeve that there's only one thing I can do. If your hand responds, I'll cast Vela Summer. I would say good game, but it was a bummer. If your I would say good game, but it was a bummer. Give your hand response, I'll cast Vela Summer. I would say good game, but it was a bummer.